Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 110 for August 19th, 2007. It's all downhill from here. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. Time to TWiT, episode 110. Leo Laporte here with John C. Dvorak, .org/blog.
Hey there.
And Patrick Norton, /slamdance.blog. What are you laughing at?
He's like a laughing maniac.
He's happy. He doesn't have to work anymore. He just sits around and collects the money.
I'm retired now.
That must be nice.
Making my living off of AdSense.
I give that 2 months.
What is it? You saw a story that Seth MacFarlane 2 days. You come on the show anytime you want to announce you're coming out of retirement, Patrick. You can be like Sinatra.
It'll be before next week.
You come out of retirement whenever you feel like it.
Hey, something we should mention here is, Skype, we're doing this over Skype, and Skype, of course, has been down for the last couple of days, but it still has some flakiness because right now I'm getting a message from Skype, I thought I'd mention it, that says Skype cannot hear you talking. Click here to select correct microphone and speaker.
What? Skype can hear
you. You can't hear me, apparently.
I hear you. That's bizarre. Yeah. So I don't know if that's related, but that's probably the big story of the week, and it sure put a scare into me. In fact, we had to kill a couple of podcasts that we had scheduled for recording because I rely on Skype. Now, somebody's going to come along and say, oh, well, what about Gizmo or other SIP products? I mean, there's plenty of other voice over internet products we could have used, but we're just so dependent on Skype.
I hate SIP. I'm sorry. Maybe it's just the implementations I've used, like Gizmo. Gizmo is one of the most miserable experiences I've ever had.
Because that's what I was preparing to do. I was preparing to move everybody to Gizmo.
I think I may have had an ugly experience with it.
No, but I remember that Dvorak also, you had problems
well,
with Gizmo.
Well, I hate to say this because Mike Robertson's a friend of mine. And
formerly of MP3.com.
Lindos. And I was like his main testifying person for his Lindos case. I testified. Anyway, so, and he got like millions out of the deal. So, but the thing is, I agree with Patrick 100%. It works kind of for a while, but it's like it takes so it's like a virus. You can't get it off your system. It boots when you don't want it to. It's just very painful. And I just got rid of it. I just don't want to deal with it. And I know a lot of people who are really into this stuff to an extreme, and they all say SIP stinks.
Well, that's too bad. SIP is.
I love it when you go to the download webpage of a website and it automatically starts opening the installer for their software.
Oh yeah, that happened to me. SIP is the signaling protocol for voice over the internet, and it's a standard. I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with SIP. There's different implementations. Asterisk supports SIP. A lot of PBXs support SIP. But the thing is, Skype just works so well. I mean, And then there are people like Alex Lindsay who complain about Skype, but it works better than anything else out there.
Yeah, what are they complaining about? I'm hearing a lot of weird noise, by the way.
Patrick's like, I think Patrick's making license plates. Is that your new job?
No. I was opening up a Gizmo window on a PC to see if it did the same thing.
Move the keyboard away from your microphone.
Sound like license plate stamping. I don't know.
Like microphone 1A. So,
John, yeah. Now that John's got the big setup. He's like the sound
guy.
He's got a rig. Yeah, he's got his own compressor. Ooh.
I have it bypassed for you.
Did they send you an Aphex? What do they send you? No, you can use it.
I have an Aphex. I haven't hooked that up yet. I'm using some PreSonus stuff.
Aphex is going to send me a 230. I'm going to try it, and it might be great.
Well,
What are you doing, Patrick? It sounds like
you're chopping up a body.
You got ferrets in there. What's going on?
No wonder Kevin Rose isn't on the show.
What? Guys, I had my microphone turned off and on mute. It's not me making the noise. Might be my network connection. Might be Skype, but it's not me.
Oh, I know what it is. You think that you're on your headset, and you're not. You're on your laptop mic.
That's Mike.
Because it wasn't muted.
Oh, you know what it is? Stupid Apple.
Oh, yeah. Blame the computer. Blame the... It is, what is
actually
it?
With all due respect to the joyous and wondrous OS X experience, the way it handles audio is stupid.
Really?
I'm sorry.
Really?
If every Windows PC I've ever used will automatically turn off the internal mic, it's not like it's that hard when you plug in something externally.
It may also be the
you
way
have to,
Skype's
you have
doing.
To you have to manually go in and change the line in port. Oh, here now.
Now you're still on your mic on your laptop mic. That's why it was so noisy, because
You're typing away.
Yeah, you need to select. I think you need to do it both in the sound preference pane.
I just did change it
and
over
Skype. It's still tap the laptop mic.
No, it sounds good. He's not. You can't hear him typing now.
Okay, maybe we fixed it then.
The microphone sounds like a piece of crap, but that's another story.
We won't, Mr. Von Neumann. Are you using a Neumann or an Audio Technica?
Me?
Yeah.
I'm using an AKG.
Oh, sorry. What does AKG stand for?
All cool graphite. I don't know.
So, anyway, Skype. We love Skype. We're dependent on it on this network, and it scared the willies out of me when it was down. Is this bad for Skype, or is this just the normal, you know, hey, Skype's been very reliable?
Well, you know, this reminds me of about 10 or 15 years ago when AOL did a big upgrade and they threw it online and they went down for days.
And did it hurt AOL?
Sometimes these things, you know, they did an upgrade at Skype, and sometimes these things don't work out in the real world. It looked good in the lab and looked good in simulation, and they threw this thing into the real world, and bam, down it goes.
And I think down harder than anybody expected. They kept saying, oh, we'll be back in 12 to 24 hours. It was well more than 24 hours before it came back.
I would love to be in one of those meetings.
Oh, can you imagine the table pounding that was going on? Patrick, are you there? We've lost Patrick. But he's still online. Maybe Skype's back down.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Patrick must be having trouble with his sound control panel. We'll move on.
It says that he's online here.
Yeah, I know. I see him. That's why I'm thinking
he's using a Macintosh. This is the problem.
Why you guys want to just bash Mac all the time? What's wrong with
you? Not me. I use a Macintosh, and I like it.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's just limited. It has a lot of things that... So I'm sitting last night with a designer who is going to help me do some design work.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought up this interesting point that you start using that iPhone for a while and that crazy interface where you can flip things around and go through photos.
You get
just
spoiled.
Spinning, and you go back to your computer and you hate it.
Yeah, you want to do
all
that
stuff.
Is this
happening to you?
No, but I have to say I'm looking forward to a computer that uses this touch interface. I think that's a great interface, and it really is a great way to work. I guess if you work with graphics a lot, as he obviously does, you kind of want to do that touching the screen, sizing, moving stuff around. I don't know. You know, the drawback to it is you get fingerprints on grease all over your screen. You're constantly cleaning the darn thing.
Yeah, but you can do it with the Google Hand. I mean, if you know,
what's
the little
Google Hand?
You
oh,
know,
I see.
Hand, you know, you can just grab something and
drag stuff around.
If you have a Wii from Nintendo and you go to the weather report, because your Wiis have a built-in Wi-Fi, and so they usually go online for you.
Right.
And so you're going, and they have, if you zoom out on the globe.
Can you use the Wiimote to do that? Like,
yeah.
Throw it around? Oh, that's cool.
No, yeah. Well, what you can do is you can grab you can zoom out on the globe, if you're looking for news stories, you zoom out and there's a big globe and you can grab it and spin it.
Wow.
And it's pretty much like the effect you get with the Apple.
I think, you know, Apple has not patented this. They don't own it.
Is that right? Because I thought they had 220 patents or something like that on this thing.
Well, they may, but, you know, the Microsoft Surface Table uses the same pinch. I understand that pinch technology is not owned by Apple and can be used by anybody. So I expect you're going to see a lot of devices. Let's get Patrick back on the line here. His Skype crashed.
The fact that when,
go ahead.
I was watching, for example, John Markoff has one of these phones, and he was looking for a photo. And I guess, I only play with the phones. So I didn't notice it. But he's very dependent on, he has like all these photos. And then he just takes his thumb and you scroll, you just throw the photos around. You make them into little thumbnails and you spin, and they roll up the screen and you can find what you're looking for pretty quickly.
The touch interface is great. I do think that, and not particularly the iPhone touch interface, but just touch is a nice way to work. I don't know if it's the right way to work on a desktop computer, but sure is a great way on a handheld device. It works very well.
No, but I think still, I'm still thinking of the Google Hand.
Yeah. Well, I guess you could do that. Yeah.
You know, a little hand
right.
that comes up.
And you kind of use, map you still use your mouse, but you'd just be moving around.
With a hand. Yeah.
You don't have an iPhone yet, John?
No, I'm not going to get one.
What? You're going to wait to the next generation, or you're not going to get one
ever? I'll wait for Gen 3.
That's what my daughter said. She must know something.
I think young. I skew young.
Did you see the iPhone, the 300-page iPhone bill? Poor Justine Azarek.
Yes, and now there was another article, the follow-up article, that 300-page, for anyone out there who wants to check this out, you go to Google and look up 300-page bill or AT&T bill. It'll come up to the top. But anyway, some woman came out with a little movie, and she showed this bill. It came in a box.
Yeah, Justine. Now, she's been on the show many times.
Now, one of the things that just started to show up now, I ran to an Australian blog where they were having this problem there, too.
It's, you know,
huge bills.
AT&T, David Pogue was the first to mention this about a month ago. AT&T, for some reason, itemizes every data transaction. And Justine is a younger generation. She only had about 200 minutes on the phone, but she told us on the Mac Break Weekly, I think it was 30,000 text messages that month. And every one of them is itemized.
It's ridiculous.
That's crazy. Every byte that you send.
That's really stupid. But, you know, that's because you're talking about new generation, old generation thinking.
They don't get it.
Should know better.
They don't get it. Now, AT&T says we can always give people a summary bill. And, you know, I didn't get a bill in the box because I immediately went to paperless billing anyway. But I guess if you, there are people. She's an outlier. I mean, most people get 20 pages or 30 pages.
Yeah, but then again, Leo, don't you think having a big box full of a giant bill as a collectible?
Bill in the box.
I mean, something you can put away and then auction off, you know, or have your grandkids auction it off.
Yeah,
look at this. This is the way it used to be back in 2007.
Cost them $7 to mail her the bill. I love that. I think we should all just put AT&T out of its misery. Ask for paper bills fully itemized.
Yeah, no, you should. Yeah, get off that electronic thing. Get it paper bills. Make them grind these things out.
How long do you think it would last before they change their policies? Customs officials say that, remember we talked last week about the downtime at Los Angeles International Airport. Patrick, if we can get some audio out of Patrick, I think he's still having audio problems, but I think he might
have
some.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now. That's great.
You know, for some reason, and I've run into several people that have had this, sometimes Skype won't work with the line input.
Oh, interesting.
On MacBooks or MacBook Pros.
That's what
without restarting the system.
We tell everybody to use a USB device for that reason, I think.
Every time I use a USB device, you spend the first 5 minutes of the podcasting bitching, telling me how crappy it is and that I should be using a USB device. So I just gave up using them.
Never mind. Forget it. You sound good. We're hearing you. That's all I care about.
The one microphone you actually do like is the one that's the fake phone with the plastic handset that costs like $8.
I know.
And every time I use that, you're like, hey,
wow,
good music.
That sounds great.
Oh. Well, there's actually a rationale for that, and I'm going to explain it because I have a Kodak 630, one of these little dual lens cameras that has the most amazing microphone in it for making little videos. And so I talked to a friend of mine who said that, you know, who's an audio engineer and he knows about this. He says these microphones, and probably that $8 microphone is one of them, are these $150 microphones that people get from China that aren't calibrated, and it's a complete crapshoot. The quality can be astonishing or crap. And there are apparently, just as a fluke, you get astonishing quality out of a few of them, and you probably have one of them.
Save that handset.
Yeah, don't get rid of that mic.
Don't let Aaron keep it at DLTV.
What he told me was that, you know, these things are so cheap that they can't, you know, you could calibrate them and make them like really high quality.
Right.
You could quality control them, but then the mic, it would cost you $25 to calibrate them.
Right.
So that's not, nobody does it.
So it turns out that the whole computer system, remember we talked about this last week, customs was down at LAX. They were routing people. 17,000 passengers were stranded. Turns out it was one computer with a bad network interface card broke the whole system down for 9 hours. One bad nick.
That's unbelievable.
It shows you they're a little bit maybe vulnerable. I don't know.
Well, did they talk about, was there, you know, is there something where if one of the nicks in the network is a secured network?
It was probably broadcasting or something, right? I mean, it was doing something weird. in any event, you know, between this and the Skype outage, it just really reminds me how reliant we are on this technology and really, frankly, how non-bulletproof it is.
You know, I think that the whole thing should be shut down.
5 years. That's all Elton John asks. 5 years without the internet.
I'm on his side now.
Yep. Sir Elton John and John C. Dvorak together at last. Do you believe the experts who say that they broke the speed of light? Is that possible? Is Einstein wrong?
I read that article 3 times and I still don't grok the whole, like, you know, we create a wormhole inside of a molecule and it's faster than light. And then my head goes pop and I go back to reading.
What's funny is that's exactly leaves of grass. What's funny is that this is exactly how sci-fi has said for years you'd be able to transcend the speed of light.
You know, I'm very skeptical, but at the same time, I have, you know, somebody once pointed out to me that Einstein based his, you know, speed of light theses, or at least some of his formulation, on Edwin Mach, who had a bunch of theories about how you can't, you know, that large objects can't go faster than the speed of sound.
Oh, dear.
And that's why you got Mach 1.
I
don't know. I've never been fully convinced that, you know, there's something that doesn't make sense about the fact that there's a limit to the speed something can go.
Well, I don't pretend to understand any of it, but according to 2 German physicists, they have forced light to overcome its own speed limit using quantum tunneling. In an experiment, microwave photons, which are energetic packets of light, appeared, and this might be the key word, appeared to travel instantaneously between two prisms forming the halves of a cube placed a meter apart.
Yeah, appeared. You're
appeared
right. That's why I'm
key.
Skeptical about this.
So, you know that meme, the LOL cats, where I can has cheeseburger, you know that?
We were talking about this, I has your power.
Last
supply.
Week. Yeah, so somebody sent me the link to Schrodinger's LOL cat. Remember the Schrodinger thought experiment where you'd have a cat in a box and depending on whether you're observing or not, whether the cat would be dead. Well, there's a great, I'll have to put this on Boing Boing. I'll have to put a link in your quantum. I'm in your quantum box. Maybe. It's actually the first LOL cat I've ever laughed at. So I just want to thank, I don't have the name of the person who sent that to me, but thank you. Bless you for sending that, that link to me that redeemed the meme.
That's a pretty awesome t-shirt too.
Yeah, wouldn't that be good? I'm in your quantum box.
There's a Cafe Press.
Is there already? There you go. Mm-hmm. There you go. That's what happens. So you were talking about this before we started. This is called Wikipedia Scanner. A guy at Caltech. He's a graduate student in computation and neural systems. Means he's probably pretty smart. Is offering users a searchable database. Now, you can always on Wikipedia look at the history and see who's edited it, but it's hard to go through it. You have to go page by page. This database ties millions of anonymous Wikipedia edits to organizations from which those edits apparently originated, cross-referencing them.
Mm-hmm.
Come up with some interesting stuff, hasn't he?
Well, it's interesting that he's resolving IP addresses.
Yeah. Well, you can do that with Rubrik. That's illegal.
Well, basically he's created the Wikipedia Scanner, which is a user searchable database.
I just love this.
That works across, basically looks at anonymous Wikipedia edits and to the organizations, I assume by the IP range, for where the changes, basically they'll get the block of IP addresses that are associated with a particular IP address that's posted a change on Wikipedia.
It's wikiscanner.virgil.gr.
Yeah.
And
V-I-R-G-I-L,
wikiscanner.virgil.gr. And then he has editor's picks.
Yeah.
So you could see, you know, the Senate or Diebold.
Yeah, Diebold eliminating long paragraphs describing the technical problems of security in their system.
Oh, busted.
You know, information. But yeah, it's
I think this is a great. This is a good example of the kinds of things that computers do so well. Walmart changing articles about Walmart. Let's just pick a few here.
Well, what's interesting is like the Wire did a pretty good article about this, and they pointed out that Walmart didn't really delete the criticisms, but you know added a few nice things to their entry.
Well, that's not so bad.
They spun it.
It's Walmart. Yeah. It's the shark of retail. It's like the most highly evolved shark in retail.
Now, by the way, The Virgil was hired by the Wikimedia Foundation. And Wikimedia Foundation, this is the number one Wired pick, modified the story so that you don't know that he was hired by them.
Ah.
Ha ha!
I missed that one.
Ha ha!
That's hilarious.
Microsoft White Watches controversy, cost of ownership, Linux comparison, Halliburton and war crimes, CIA vandal. This is an odd one. The CIA, somebody at the CIA vandalized Pope Benedict's entry at Wikipedia to say he's the Fonz. Now that's got to be an error.
What do they got? A bunch of old TV? What is the CIA doing this?
Hey!
Well, it's kind of funny because you look at, like, there's a whole link of editor's picks on the side of the wiki scanner. So DARPA.mil, you know, it's like, yeah. You know, Saturn, you know, disambiguation. It's still a GM automobile brand, added Virginia, you know, Tech.
I'm thinking there's somebody, you know, there's a bunch of jokers at the CIA with nothing better to do. They don't think anybody is obviously not tracking them because they're the CIA, for God's sake. And these clowns are doing these joke entries as, you know, as some way to kill time in the office. I think it's hilarious.
Somebody at Greenpeace is modifying Ted Nugent's entry.
What a shock.
Philip Morris.
That doesn't make any sense.
I know. you've got to read this. This is if you go to the Wired article, they've done a ton of them. And I guess there's more coming all the time. So, but, you know, it just shows you, you know, not everything is alive on the net. And when you post, I think people forget your internet address is right there.
This is what Tor was invented for.
Yeah. Maybe the CIA should learn something about Tor, perhaps. I don't know. Just a thought.
Then again, it may be that the CIA is doing these posts to make it look as though they can be tracked, when in fact the real posts that they're doing are done through some system that is completely untraceable.
It's wheels within that wheels. What is it named? Could be, how about maybe the quantum system?
Could be Walmart.
Could be. It's all, you know, Walmart runs everything.
I think Walmart owns the CIA.
Here's another disclosure. Redmond. Microsoft has hired two veteran lobbyists, Thomas Boggs and Kathleen Ireland, not Kathy Ireland, Kathleen Ireland, along with Antitrust Modernization Commission Vice Chairman Clinton White. That's not his name. Former Clinton White. This is what happens when you cut off a sentence.
What is this story?
Delicious. And former Clinton White House attorney Jonathan Yarowski. To kind of lobby against Google buying DoubleClick. Microsoft doesn't like that idea.
Yarowski removed last year.
Doesn't like that idea. Maybe Microsoft doesn't want Google to buy to buy DoubleClick. I wonder.
Well, you know, Microsoft's finally learning the ropes about how to do things kind of through the back door.
Google has a pretty active lobbying arm, I thought.
Every company that has a valuation in the building in the building as an active lobbying. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's everybody lobbies. Everybody who's a big player in the industry has lobbyists. Just a question of how effective they are.
Yeah, and heaven forbid that our legislatures actually work on behalf of the public.
Oh, John.
I'm just gonna step back. I'm gonna step back. Not to
don't make me start weeping because
it's the bait. John, well, by the way, is this stock market crash? Just as long as we're talking about finance.
Yeah, because everyone knows I've got this theory.
Is this stock market crash the crash you've been talking about, the bust burst?
No. My belief is that there needed to be a huge correction anyway, so when you have the real big run-up, which is going to happen. Now, people like to point out that, you had this mortgage situation that triggered this whole thing. And my cycle is 80 years, I said, look, what happened 80 years ago? You had the Florida land crash almost actually a little earlier, but late 26.
Is this like the Florida land crash?
So there's the Florida land crash, which caused the market to correct. And then you had your big run-up, which will begin somewhere
around
the
middle. By the way, my ancestors were involved in the Florida land crash.
Really? Buying or selling?
I think they got stuck with a large community that rapidly became worthless.
And it sank
into
the
long term, if they'd have held on to that property, they'd probably been better off.
It's good now.
Long term investing.
Yeah, so, it would have been like a 60-year investment at that point.
Calacanis says this could be a bad quarter for Web 2.0 companies for four reasons. The stock market correction will affect online advertising.
Probably.
Which would affect us.
Most of them don't have a revenue stream. Two, most of them that do have a revenue stream is going to be impacted by low advertising investment.
Google and Apple stocks are going away, right? They're dying, and so that's some. I don't know how that affects Web 2.0. Technorati laid off 8 people. I don't know why that means anything. Including, by the way, the CEO is gone at Technorati. I don't know what's going on over there. Didn't Sifri disappear? He stepped down, but it was kind of sudden. The resignation effective immediately. He'll remain chairman of Technorati's board. So maybe Technorati is the canary in the mine, the first Web 2.0 company to kind of disappear. Oh, there's Bill McCrone. Let's add Bill McCrone to the... Hey, Bill.
Hello.
Welcome. We haven't had John Twitt in a long time. Glad to get you back.
Has been a while.
Yeah. Let me add... John's for some reason dropped off. I'm going to add him back on, and we'll get back to work here.
Yeah, you know, Apple stock's looking pretty good if you take a look at it in like six months
Apple
or a year.
Yeah, but they've taken a dive in the last few days.
Well, sure, but they were up to 145, but they're still 120 in a year ago. Sure. They were under 100.
I think it was going to go to 170 and then crash, but who knows?
Google's down below 500 again, too.
That's not going to last forever.
Google's a long-term hold in the Dvorak portfolio. The imaginary divorce.
I shouldn't even be writing about any of this stuff. I should just have bought the Google.
I know. I bought the Google. So, Bill, how you doing? I haven't talked to you in ages. What you up to these days?
I'm doing just fine. I'm still writing like a darn fool. And
sounds like you're typing now.
That's Patrick.
And that's not me.
That's Patrick.
I'm not typing. There is no typing going on.
He's making license plates again.
All right, there is a mystery typer on the line who is just trying to fill our heads with keyboard sounds.
That's it. Moving along, we talked about Skype's outage, and we actually have done a few stories already, but I'm glad you could join in. We're talking right now about the notion that the stock market correction that's going on might be an indicator that bad times are ahead, especially for Web 2.0 companies.
And I'm a naysayer. Well, I think it's just a blip.
Yeah, unless the Web 2.0 companies have a lot of real estate holdings, I really don't see the connection.
Exactly. I don't either.
Good. I'm glad to hear. As a kind of a Web 2.0 company, I'm glad to hear that.
Why would you want to identify with Web 2.0, Leo?
Because I didn't want to be 1.0.
Ajax on your site?
I got
as far as I'm concerned, you're not.
There's no Ajax.
Is that the
There's
deciding
no Ajax.
Line?
It is for me. If you got no Ajax, you're not 2.0.
You know what? So I am stealth 2.0 because all the Ajax is behind the scenes in the administration page. There is in fact Ajax, a lot of it on my site, but you can't see it.
Ajax. You know, I'm really disappointed in the fact that Ajax is being promoted to such an extreme, because I find on a lot of pages, and besides the fact that it screws up everybody's numbers, I find on a lot of pages that half the time Ajax, if it's not perfectly implemented, that you get these menus and then you go to select something and the menu goes away or it moves over to the left and you're chasing it around the screen, you know, to try to click on something. It doesn't highlight right away. I mean, I think it's just a joke.
Well, I have to say, if it's done poorly, it's the worst thing in the world, and it does take a lot of work. You know, maybe it's a way to ensure work for those who can figure it out.
It's not supposed to be difficult. It's supposed to just be standards.
Yeah, it's tough, though, and partly because that no browser really adheres to the standards. So you're doing versions for Explorer,
actually,
for Firefox.
The Opera people would take tremendous offense because they work very hard to conform to the standards.
And how many pages does Opera work well with?
Well, all that's the cruel irony.
What about Safari for Windows? Safari for Windows. I would recommend people take load Safari for Windows and then go to the KQED site in San Francisco, Channel 9, and take a look at the TV schedules with Safari and see what you end up with.
Unreadable, yeah. You can't use Google Spreadsheet with Safari. So this is the problem, is that a lot of Ajax breaks, not because it's not standard, but because the browsers are implementing it all over the place. Apple and Dell have slipped in customer satisfaction rankings. In fact, overall, the PC industry slightly fell in the second quarter of the year, mostly, I think, because of problems at Apple and Dell. This is the University of Michigan citing the American Customer Satisfaction Index data, saying that each Apple and Dell dropped 5 percentage points in customer satisfaction. Still Apple number one, but only a measly 79% customer satisfaction.
Well, Dell's got other problems. They're having to restate all their earnings for the last 4 years.
Oh, let's talk about that.
That's kind of interesting. I mean, I don't see that as that far away from having some sort of a federal investigation.
Well, it's
isn't that the same a variation on the theme that Apple's been having the troubles with?
No, it's not an options thing. I think it's
not an options. Pardon
yeah,
me.
No, this is just statements. Statements of earnings.
In order to appear more successful, and Dell's internal audit discovered this, and they admitted it. I mean, they stepped forward, which I imagine helps a little bit in dodging prosecution, but still. Dell concluded Thursday that, this is my favorite, some employees had misled its auditors. Like what? The guy who makes the machine and manipulated results to meet performance goals for more than 4 years.
Some guy on the assembly line?
Some employees. Well, let me think. CFO. I don't know. You know, Dell said the net income is about $50 to $150 million lower. That's 2 to 7 cents per share lower than stated. Now it's a $55 billion company, but still 2 to 7 cents a share is not insignificant.
Well, to the SEC, it's not. This story is not going away anytime soon.
Oh no, they just announced it. Federal regulators have not said anything yet, but I expect we'll hear a lot more about this soon. It's interesting.
But a guy can't restate his earnings anymore without going to jail. I think it's horrible.
Well, the question is why the earnings were wrong in the first place. That's the thing.
Well, you know, you got to please the investors. You got to get those quarterly numbers in there, and you got to ship product, and so you need to restate things once in a while.
Yeah, it's a little easier to do before Sarbanes-Oxley, I can tell you that right now.
You know, I'm getting a lot of mail, John, because John is on a campaign against Sox. And by the way, most of the mail is from auditors saying, no, Sox is a great thing.
Well, yeah, these guys are cleaning up. These auditors are cleaning up on this scam.
All right, let me quote Matthew Johnson. Subject line, misunderstandings of Sarbanes-Oxley. In recent episodes, John seems to be confused about what SOX is all about. I'm a CPA. Who is an IT auditor, and I've been performing internal and external SOX audits since companies were required to be compliant in 2004. He works for a Big Four accounting firm. So I think I have a pretty good perspective on the process. First, I'll agree with the statement that the rules imposed under SOX about what types of services audit firms can sell to their audit clients is something the Anderson auditors at Enron should have followed. A law was not necessary for that, though. Blah, blah, blah. John's dispute about SOX is the part of the law called Section 404, which roughly states that management must maintain internal controls over their financial reporting process. This is for all the back office business processes and IT controls. This has been desperately needed because auditors have for years been begging companies to adopt these strong internal controls. That's easier, makes it easier to audit a company. With strong controls, an auditor can rely more on the controls and have to test less of the individual transactions. SOX is helping to fix these issues. He says it's just growing pains.
It's not an issue. This is like a guy typically saying, you know, this makes my job a lot easier, so John's full of crap.
No, but the real joke is when you go out and you look at all of the enterprise software and it all advertises itself as SOX compliant, and there's nothing for it to be compliant to. It's a complete scam. You know, you guys remember 10, 15 years ago when everything was new, now with AI added. And SOX compliance is just the latest scam.
Actually, I'm putting SOX compliant on my blog. The blog, well, it's SOX compliant.
And you have internal audits in place? Internal controls?
No, I don't need to because I'm not a public corporation. But thus, I'm SOX compliant.
Oh, there you go. He also says, because this is one of your contentions, John, is that there are no IPOs because of SOX. He says it's due to risks of litigation, not SOX.
Ha.
Ha! Ha! I say.
There's always been risks of litigation. What's changed? What has changed in the scheme of things? It's SOX. It's the only new variable.
He sent us a link, and I'll send it to you to an op-ed piece.
I got the letter from the guy. I got like 10 letters. Just from the same guy, and he probably works at some big eight accounting firm, and that's the end of it.
Big four, he says.
Big four. I'm sorry. What am I thinking?
Even better.
Not eight anymore.
Yeah, that's right. There's only four left.
It used to be eight. Let's see. Moving along to yet another controversial story. Boing Boing says the reporters with the Associated Press and CNET, and I might ask you about Markoff as well, are suing Hewlett-Packard and former HP executives, including former chairwoman Patricia Dunn and former ethics chief Kevin Hunsaker, over the spying that HP did on these journalists. Remember, HP kind of got off. They got let off the hook on this. But now they're civil suits. They're seeking damages for illegal and reprehensible conduct and an invasion of privacy.
Now
Markoff was one of the guys who was pretexted and spied upon. Is he a part of this suit? He was pretty upset. I remember.
I've talked to him about this, and you know, apparently the New York Times has looked into whether they should or whether he should sue. I think there's something going on. He hasn't made a decision to sue, and the way it looks is probably, I'm not thinking he's going to. But if these other four guys, you know, the way you want to do a suit like this is let these other four guys go in, you know, and
lead
throw
the
their
charge.
Money away.
Yeah.
If they win, hey, it's a walk away. You just
season.
Walk in and you just tell them to give
me
you
too.
A check.
Me too, Your Honor. The charges against Dunn were dropped. She had to resign, but they were dropped, and the rest were reduced to community service. So they really got let off on this one. HP paid $13.5 million to California to establish a fund for law enforcement activities related to privacy.
Isn't that funny?
There's at least one or two reporters. One works for Forbes. Everybody over there knows who he is. That apparently was just steaming and livid over the
furious.
Fact that he wasn't pretexted.
They weren't looking at
like
me.
A Hunter S. Thompson rant.
Why did they leave me out?
Just for those who didn't follow the story, remember this was all about leaks from the HP boardroom that HP was trying to track down, and not only did they tap their own board member, more members, but they were tapping and pretexting reporters at the same time. I don't know. I'd sue. I can understand that.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting to see how it comes out. I think it's a wheel spinning. I mean, the thing is, what did these guys find out that was so damaging against any one person?
But
I mean, it's like, well, this guy's sure dull.
Well, are they doing it because they want to make sure other companies are more highly motivated in not doing it? Or are they doing it for a payday? Or does it really matter?
What do you think? A payday, of course.
Why else would you sue?
Absolutely.
Why else?
To make the world better, John. Remember?
What planet are you from?
Frankly, this is the most depressing twit we've ever done. It's like the world sucks. Everybody's corrupt, and Sox is ruining everything.
Which is a great segue into creative and their drivers.
All right, go ahead. Patrick's been dying to slam creative about their drivers.
Is there a company with worse driver support than Creative?
Creative
ATI?
Who?
Creative Labs.
Creative Labs, they got those sound car people?
Yeah.
What do you use? Are they still in business?
Lots of people.
Yeah, well, I had a card. I got an older system I use for writing and web browsing and stuff, and I wanted to reinstall the audio card in it. And, of course, the audio card is no longer supported, but you can still search their website for drivers. All of the drivers and all of the related content to that has been deleted.
And this really bothers you? I mean, what was the card, a $15 card or a $17 card?
It was like a $125 card when I bought it.
In its day?
Wow.
It's worth $3 now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's just, I'm sorry. I come from the terrible, like, I bought it, it still works, I shouldn't need to replace it kind of camp.
Oh.
I know that makes me terribly old-fashioned, John.
It's weird.
It's just sad that they can't even be bothered. I mean, they've obviously had miserable problems with driver support with Vista and other things, but it's just kind of like, couldn't you at least keep the old drivers around on your website?
I agree with that. What's the off?
Well, then maybe it was, well, they want to drive people into, you know, this is also the company that used to never allow you to download drivers if you lost your installation disk. For audio cards for a bunch of years.
You know what, Patrick? People shouldn't buy those products from companies like that.
True. All right. Turtle Beach it is.
I mean, Sound Blaster isn't even a standard anymore.
It's not, is it? AC, yeah. That on motherboard audio is completely taken over everywhere. AC97.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of people using the. Yeah. A lot of people like the X-Fi cards.
The who?
X-Fi.
Who?
I haven't heard.
I
about
mean,
those.
I have one on one of my machines, but you know, I've got that X-Fi Extreme with a whole external thing, and it sure is swell. But frankly, I never use it.
it's just a sound card. But well, X-Fi,
you know,
X-Fi
like
is
the, use
a,
of the term. It's swell.
No. You just love my folksy terms, John. I know you've been after
swell.
For 2 decades.
I got to get Macron and Pornell on together on one podcast.
Everything on a
will be
show.
Great. Hey, the X-Fi.
No,
go ahead.
X-Fi.
X-Fi is a creative product, though, right? It's a sound blaster.
It has one neat feature, John. It's really swell.
Actually, my version of that is nifty. I love it.
Nifty is au courant. This is swell. And that's
wow.
The 24-bit crystallizer.
What's that do?
24-bit crystallizer?
Does that let you travel in time?
travel and quit.
It actually kind of does, because it takes games and upgrades them to extreme fidelity.
It does. It takes CD quality audio and adds another 4 bits of of quality to it, and it's a decompressor. And
how could that work, though, Bill? Because
I could get that. That sounds boss.
If the data is not boss, if the data is not there, how? What he adds 4 bits? What does a 4-bit come from?
It decompression is a well-known art, and there's lots of compression on, especially on CD music.
Really? It's compressed?
Because you only have 16 bits of range, and that's not enough. You had more on a well-engineered vinyl record.
So we're going to get, by the way, to an anniversary this week of the CD in a second.
25 years.
All right, but don't rush it, because I have
you like the effect.
I think the crystallizer is awesome.
Is it like an expander? What is it doing? I don't understand how.
It expands the high end. It increases the dynamic range, and it just makes the music sound better. Huh. There's an analog product that lots of studio musicians and even live musicians use called the BBE Sonic Maximizer, and you just find these in every recording studio and in most stage things. And it just takes what's coming out of the microphones and the console and maximizes it.
Huh.
Well, I want one. I want to be maximized.
Stuff like this usually cruds up the audio more than it helps it. It's kind of nice to hear of something that actually...
Well, yeah, and I trust Bill, because, I mean, Bill really knows about audio. So if you say so, I believe you.
Yeah, it really does work. It really does sound spectacular. So you can re-record your music maximized.
Wow.
So that's this is called the crystallizer, and it comes with what piece of gear?
Well, it comes on a couple of models of the Creative X-Fi, and I just happen to have the, I guess it's the Extreme, the one with the external console.
Extreme Music, it says. Yeah. Patrick, is this the is this what you're trying to get a creative driver for? Is this particular unit?
Well, he's trying to get it for some clunker that ran on CPM, apparently.
You got your X-Fi Elite Pro, your X-Fi Platinum Fatality Champion Series.
Well, with all due respect to the crystallizer, and I am curious now, why would I go out and, you know, why would I go out and spend another $100 on a sound card when I have a perfectly good AWE 64 that's been serving me for all these years?
The AWE 64. Now that's neat. And boss.
I got my old Nash Ambassador, and it still runs.
So you have, because you have the breakout box, you must have the platinum version. It looks like that's the one with the breakout box and a remote control.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And how much is that?
No idea.
A lot.
No idea. $159?
It works with Vista. There's the good news. Huh. All right, we're going to celebrate a couple of birthdays. As you said, the CD is celebrating its 25th, but you know, this is the anniversary of the day of Elvis's death, or was this week. Anyway.
Yes.
And actually, a little old lady was camping at Graceland and passed away. This week. Yeah, that's kind of sad. But it made me think there must be a great book on Audible.com
About camping at Graceland?
About Elvis. And there is Jerry Schilling, who played college ball. Or no, I'm sorry, high school football with Elvis. And stayed his friend, his bodyguard, his photo double, and even a co-executive producer on a karate film. Elvis is confidant. It's hard not to laugh.
Wow. Well, hold on a second, Leo. Let me write this down.
Yeah, it's called Me and a Guy Named Elvis, My Lifelong Friendship with Elvis Presley. Jerry Schilling, you want to hear a little bit of it? Because, you know, you're going to like this.
I'm in.
This is good. Yes, you're going to hear it.
No.
X5 version.
This explains why all the Elvis movies have been playing nonstop.
That's right.
Classic movie channels.
That's right. North Memphis.
Here's the story of him meeting Elvis.
12-year-old kid. Living at the little brick duplex my father rented on Breedlove Street, looking for some way to fight off the boredom of one more stretch of sweltering afternoon.
This is before Twit, of course. And what he does is he starts a touch football game, and Ebbis is the quarterback. So anyway, that's our audible pick. I just figured we should do something topical.
That was very topical. Very good. It had nothing to do with tech, but it was very topical.
Well, you can't always. There are plenty of tech books, by the way, on Audible. A lot of books on audible.com.
Sorry I mentioned it.
We want to encourage you. Audible is a sponsor of the show, and we really appreciate it. They've just been a great sponsor. And, you know, I'm joking around, but, you know, that's actually a fun book to listen to. It's got 4.75 stars out of 5. So people love this book. It's 14 hours of Ebbis, and it could be yours for free. You get a credit when you join Audible. You go to audible.com/twit, and you can pick a book from their thousands of great books. You could pick a different book, John. You got another book?
Yeah, well, you know, it seems to me that since we're on the show plugging this company, since they're our sponsor, some sort of an extra special deal, so we didn't have to buy any books.
Just like,
is that for you or for everyone, John?
Well, just for, I don't care about you, to be honest about it.
But for you, me. Then.
You want me to arrange a subscription to Audible for you, John? I can
no,
do that.
No, that's okay.
I don't have
I don't
a free
care.
One. I pay $15 a month, and it's worth it. I get two, because I'm grandfathered in. They don't have that deal anymore. But I love Audible. I am I subscribed when I used to commute to Tech TV, and I had spent 3 hours a day in the car, and I still don't. You know, I don't spend any time in the car anymore. And I still,
you know, the problem with me, I don't listen to enough of these books. I should. And the rest of the family are book, you know, listening to book addicts.
Oh, really?
I mean,
oh, that's neat.
Everybody does, except me. I listen to right wing talk radio.
And, he's a Michael Savage fan.
It's kind of pathetic.
Wait a minute.
You know,
who do you listen to?
That's where you get your material, John.
I think so.
I get a lot of it from these guys. Don't kid yourself.
So, who do you listen to?
I listen to all the bit.
Savage, O'Reilly.
I listen to Savage because he's the most entertaining.
He's hysterical.
I also listen to Rush Limbaugh occasionally, but the problem with Limbaugh is he's up against now Jim Rome, who I consider to be one of the great broadcasters.
Rome's actually very good. I actually, my radio show comes out of the Jim Rome studio.
Yeah, well, Jim Rome is unbelievable, and mainly because he created his own world. I mean, he's got his own lingo, and he's got his own kind of group of people.
That's what you
got
to do.
He berates his customers in a very funny way. And then, what's his name? The comic is on at that same time.
Franken?
Dennis Miller.
Oh, Miller.
He's on one of the stations
Good
at the
Lord.
Same time as Limbaugh. Well, he's toast because of this. I mean, he's like sandwiched between Limbaugh and Rome at the morning hours, and he's actually, his show's actually gotten fairly good. So I'm clicking between them because, you know, the trouble is everyone runs on the same clock in radio, which everybody wants to know why you hit the button and everyone's got a commercial.
Well, that's why.
Time.
That's why. We don't want you to leave us.
So they have these clocks but sometimes the clocks go out of sync and then you can make a lot of jumps back and forth.
Well, that's just a long roundabout way of saying listen to Audible books. Audible.com/twit. We thank them for their support. This Week in Tech.
What an ad.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let us celebrate. Let us commemorate the 25th anniversary of the CD on August 17th, 1982. Now, there's some debate. According to an article by the BBC, the first CD produced was The Visitors by ABBA. But if you read the official press release, I think Philips Corporation, who made this first CD, was a little embarrassed to have the notion that the first CD was ABBA. So they say it was a Richard Strauss waltz.
I think it was a Richard Strauss waltz because I remember when these things first came out, I remember the first thing being a classical recording.
Well, there you go. They produced it in August. Nobody had a CD player till October. Bill, do you remember when you... Yeah, really. Do you remember your first CD, Bill?
Absolutely.
Must have been classical, right?
Well, no. It was when the when Verve released the Ella Fitzgerald songbook on CD.
What a great
that
disc.
Was the reason to buy all of the Ella CDs and buy a player.
Were you happy with the quality of the first CDs you heard?
Surprisingly, yes. Of course, those were really carefully engineered. I'm sure they could be done even better now. But you know, when you had engineers sitting there just loving the experience and gain riding and scratch filtering and doing all that stuff, they really did a superb job. Those CDs still sound great to me.
Philips did the hardware. Sony did the software, the firmware for the player. And there's, you know, there's debate also about why the CD was the size it is, the length. Some say it's the size of a Dutch beer coaster. That I find hard. I find that hard to believe. Others,
I thought it was.
Go ahead.
Well, I understood it that it was pocketable with very, you know, you could put it in a
fit in a pocket. Yeah,
it was a pocketable.
The same pocket that fit the Walkman, right?
Or the Dutch beer coaster, actually. They all fit in the same pocket. The other theory is that Sony...
I've been to Holland a lot, and I've never seen a beer coaster that size ever.
All right. Well, maybe you'll believe this story, that a Sony executive said, "Wait, I don't care what size it is, as long as it's long enough to hold Beethoven's Ninth." And in fact, it is just. And that makes sense, because okay. You don't want to break up Beethoven's Ninth.
No.
I was thinking more it holds the... the second Live at the Apollo recording by James Brown. Oh,
what an amazing album.
You know, that ends right at the end of the length of the CD. It's a great album, one of the great collectibles.
69 minutes and 59 seconds.
Good God!
And it's over. So what was your first CD, Mr. Patrick Norton? I'm sure you remember.
Actually, I'm not sure if it was R.E.M.'s Life's Rich Pageants or if it was a Joe Jackson album.
Oh, Joe Jackson sounded good on CD. How about you, John?
You know, I can't remember. I mean, so many of these really old ones. So it was some early rock thing of some sort.
I remember very well for some reason. I think a lot of people remember their first CDs. Mine was Roxy Music Avalon, and I picked it because I thought, well, this will sound good on CD. It'll be well produced. And it did sound good.
I think mine was the, what was the song?
99 Luftballons.
Never mind. But I think I remember it, but I can't remember what it is.
Well, it was 25 years ago. That's why.
Huh.
Happy anniversary CD. And of course, the CD is a dying medium now. It reached its peak.
Well, wait, Leo, before you finish, you should mention that to this day, 200 billion of these babies have been sold.
Wow.
200 billion.
That's a lot of plastic.
Sure is.
The peak was 2001 when it sold 700 million. It's down now to about 550 million units a year in the U.S. So it is kind of dying out. You think it'll last?
I don't know. I don't think so.
How much longer for the CD? How long before downloadable music supersedes
data? I'm backing up all my data now on DVDs.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the thing is that music needs to be sold at higher bit rates. And right now online, you know, a lot of the bit rates you can get music at is garbage.
Record producers are saying that. They're upset by the 128 kilobit.
Yeah. 128 sucks.
Yeah.
192 begins to be listenable.
Yeah. 192 is the beginning of acceptable if you have a decent system.
We've talked about this before, though, that consumers don't seem to care anymore. They can't.
These kids, they all have tin ears because they put those plugs in their ears. They crank it up. They're half deaf. When they talk to you, they yell at you because they think that they're talking at a low voice.
Well, is it that, John, is it that so much? Or is it that we have an entire generation that's been raised on digital cable or satellite with heavy compression on the channels? They started downloading music in their early teen years in 128 megabit MP3 format, off the internet, which sounded crappy, you know, now, just as crappy now as it sounded then. You know, and the standards have kind of been lowered. It's amazing when you think about just exactly much, you know, you look at you know, sort of standard def television, and it's amazing how crappy it is on a lot of cable networks compared to what it is on over the air, because they're compressing it and they're squeezing it, because, you know, I need that extra 300 channels on DirecTV. It's just, it's frustrating.
Good article by Joel Selvin in the Chronicle. He quotes Phil Ramone, the great record producers saying, you can get used to awful. You can appreciate nothing. We've done it with fast food. We're doing it with music.
Well, you know, I agree with you, Patrick, to a point. The other thing is, if you go out and hang out with some guys who manufacture speakers, they say nobody buys speakers anymore.
Right.
They have the, you know, these things in their ears, and they crank it up, and they go deaf, and then they, you know, the sound's not going to be any, you're going to have any range anyway when you've got this thing pumping, like, injecting sound directly to the eardrum. And, you know, within a few years, I mean, they don't give a crap what things sound like. And nobody has a, you know, who buys nice speaker systems and sits back and relaxes and tries to imagine the sound stage? Nobody.
Home theater people.
Well, that's, yeah, home theater the people.
But they're not listening to music, even. They're listening to explosions.
Exactly. But, you know, those subwoofers really do come in handy for a lot of orchestral stuff, too.
Interesting.
Yeah, no, totally. I'm a great, but you're an old guy. Relative.
That's true. I'm an old fart.
We're all old farts, except for Patrick.
And it's like, you know, so we can complain about this and like from our perspective, but, you know, eventually it's going to be revitalized. There will be a comeback because somewhere along the line, someone's going to discover, you know, hey, these things that the way we're doing it stinks. It sounds crummy. Let's, you know, listen to this guy's thing.
I'm going on in this article, and this might lend credence to this rebirth. A guy named John Meyer, who builds speakers at Meyer Soundlines in Berkeley, very high-end speakers, says, the truth is, literally, poor audio does not touch you as much as better audio. He says it turns you into an observer because the brain is working harder. This is how MP3 works. It takes out parts of the sound that you don't need to hear, and the brain has to solve this. And it's working so hard that you don't actually get it. Stimulates the brain in a different way. They quote a guy, Dr. Robert Sweetow, who's head of UC San Francisco's audiology department. He says, poor fidelity music stimulates the brain in different ways with different neurons, perhaps lesser neurons stimulated. There are fewer cortical neurons connected back to the limbic system where the emotions are stored. So this crappy compressed music doesn't move you in the way that high quality music does.
There's another interesting statistic there, too, and that is that the average dynamic range for popular music is 3 dB.
Wow.
That's not,
that's not
a lot.
That's not
true.
Possible.
That's the compression.
No, actually, I'll
that's
buy
the
into
compression.
That
means it's so highly compressed.
Check it out, John. It's true.
I'll buy into that.
That's horrible.
Well, it has to sound good on the radio.
Exactly.
That's not good on the radio, and also it's amazing. I mean, you know, it's funny to listen to orchestral music if you've been listening to a lot of rock and roll, because, you know, once you get past kind of like the late 60s, early 70s, there's not a whole lot of dynamic range built into most albums. And you know what I mean? When you run into that situation where, you know, there's a flute or a piccolo, and then all of a sudden the entire orchestra jumps in and it blasts you back in your seat, which is what it was supposed to do. But, you know, that can be a little it's just not the way music's built anymore.
Exactly.
All right.
So.
Well, that brings me to the first CD I bought, which was the Money for Nothing. What's the name of that group?
Oh yeah, Dire Straits. And
Dire Straits
Chicks
first
for free.
Album. That money. Yep. That album had a huge dynamic range, and one of the things I liked about it, especially the early one, I think I had maybe even a Japanese pressing, is that the dynamic range was so outstanding, especially when that song began, that you could demonstrate your stereo system using the CD player to people, and it would just blow them out of the room. Because, yeah, you know, as we know, as you have a 90 dB headroom on those things, and they were taking advantage of it. But if everything's been compressed down to 3, it's ludicrous. What's the point?
Exactly.
Well, this is the most depressing episode of Twit we've ever done. The world is going to hell in a handbasket. Audio
episode.
Sucks. Politicians are corrupt.
And yeah, we've got the internet.
Bitches.
We're all distracted and happy.
But at least we're distracted and happy. That's it, Patrick Norton. You hit the nail on the head.
Corruption lurks.
I want to thank you all for being here. John C. Dvorak is online at Dvorak.org/blog. And if you don't know that by now, shame on you. The best place to go to get all your crap.
Check it out.
Patrick Norton is unemployed but ready to have a baby. We congratulate you, Patrick. That's such great news.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I actually start my new job on Monday.
Oh, yes.
Very exciting.
And what job will that be?
Going to work for Revision 3.
Aha!
What a shock!
The facts come out. Thank you for giving us the scoop, Patrick. That's great. So now it's Jim Latterback, Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, Sarah Lane, Martin Sargent, David Prager. It's practically Tech TV.
Hardly.
Retirement Center.
It's the old folks home for Tech TVers. Hey, that's great. What are you going to do on Revision 3?
Oh, you know, making content.
Continue
doing System, which I've been working. David Randolph is amazing. He's been doing a lot of projects. We're doing more, you know, basically episode concentrated on a single project, going in depth on how to do something. That would be system.org, S-Y-S-T-M.org. And then there's another show I'm going to be working on, but it looks like we're going to have to get a fresh new name for it.
Can you describe what it's going to be about anyway?
Well, it's going to be about, you know, using technology and not getting your ass kicked by it.
Sounds good to me. Hey, that's great news. I'm glad to hear it. I guess it's not a huge surprise, but I'm glad to hear it instead of from the gossip columns to actually hear it here first. Thank you, Patrick. That's great.
You're welcome.
Congratulations. Bill McCrone is writing everywhere. And where's the best place to find you, Bill?
Well, I'm pretty sporadic these days, but I mean, you can just Google me or something. But I guess my biggest project is the Wall Street Journal Holiday Gift Guide.
Oh, neat.
Which is going to be an enormous undertaking a little later this year.
That sounds exciting. Will that be on newsstands?
That'll be in the Wall Street Journal.
It'll be in the Journal. Okay, good.
And I imagine it'll have an online component and all of that stuff. And, yeah, it should be fun.
And there's always billsbest.com.
Well, yeah, that's the site that Ziff Davis froze 10 years ago, and I haven't been able to update it since.
It's still got a Yahoo button on it. I love it. And Macron.net, is that frozen?
No, I don't ever update it, but it's still out there.
It's not, yeah.
You and Patrick Norton.
Not a blogger.
I love it. Anyway, we're so glad to have you back on, Bill. It's great to hear from you. Don't be a stranger.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you all for joining us. Don't forget audible.com/twit, a great place to find your favorite books, including books about Elvis. I'm Leo Laporte. We'll see you next time. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.
You know, you still have cops in the, you know, it's usually in Vegas or Pierce County or something like that.
Yep.
And they have a similar show in Canada called To Protect and Serve.
Oh, I bet it's great.
And the show, the Canadian version of the show, I swear to God, is nothing more than a Canadian cop that's usually walking a beat, poking a drunk with a stick, saying, get up, go home.
Hey, you littering eggs. Get out of here.
Get up, go home. Go home now, go home.
We got a low-speed chase going down Main Street, eh?
That's the whole show.
Bad boys.
Twit, baby. Let's go round.